So how, at 10 o'clock on an overcast Addis Ababa morning in April 2019, did I end up sitting in the company of two generals at a musical parade ground while the marching band of the Ethiopian National Defence Force marched past in full regalia, playing a selection of tunes from Sousa to Asta Awaki? The journey starts in Victoria Park, Hackney, London, on Hiroshima Day, August 6, 1983, the first time I ever saw the Fallout marching band. These 36 years were bookended by two musical marching bands that on the surface could not be more different. One, part of the military of the Federal Democratic Republic of Ethiopia, the second most populous nation in Africa. The other, a London-based, loose anarcho-feminist collective of anti-nuclear campaigners which had come out of the peace movement, committed to consensus decision-making and non-violent direct action. In the 1980s, the Fallout Marching Band were one of the best-known political street bands in Europe. Originally a loose collection of free improvisers with strong ties to the London Musicians Collective, the band spent much of the 80s playing at actions at the peace camps that were established around various American army bases in the UK, including Greenham Common, and were regulars on CND demos. We also busked regularly to fundraise in the long-standing miners' strike of 1984, toured Spain as guests at various anarchist groups supporting the anti-OTAN movement in the lead-up to the Spanish referendum on NATO withdrawal in 1986, and in the 1984 famine, while Bob Geldof was trying to feed the world, we became involved with the Relief Society for Tigray, REST, in London, who are publicising and raising money and goods for the areas of northern Ethiopia liberated by rebel armies, where the Ethiopian government was withholding aid. Through our involvement with REST, we learned about the culture and politics of Tigray, and in particular of the TPLF, the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, a Marxist-Leninist group who were at war with the Ethiopian government, also Marxist-Leninist, otherwise known as the Derg, at that time the most heavily armed government in Africa, backed by the Soviet Union.
معبيت قدلي عديك قدمه
The idea that the Fallout Marching Band should do a tour of the liberated areas of Tigray started as a joke. But one day, a message came from the field for musicians to come and help them develop their music. The cultural troops of the TPLF wanted to learn to notate traditional Tigrayan music, arrange it for modern electronic instruments, and learn to record and amplify it more effectively. We took this back to the band, but the people who had the desire to go and seemingly the skill set needed were myself and my partner John. Looking back, we were hilariously underprepared and naive. We fundraised, bought essential supplies, found a method to try and teach notation and writing music, and we put together a library and a listening library. We did what we could to get money and publicise the Tigrayan situation. In January 1987, we flew to Khartoum, Sudan, the only route into the liberated areas of Tigray. We travelled by night to avoid Derg spotter planes on a slow convoy of Mercedes trucks, each loaded with sacks and people, along dirt roads and dry riverbeds, checking for mines. By day, the convoy hid under trees. Communication was almost impossible. No one spoke much English, and our Tigrinya was very limited. We were in the hands of fighters, and we did as we were told. In the Kaza Valley, somewhere in northwest Tigray, the Greza Music School was convened for our visit. Our students were young fighters, mainly from rural areas, often driven to join the TPLF after the Derg had committed an atrocity in their village or against their family. They were also musicians, dancers and actors. The cultural troops were a vital part of the TPLF propaganda bureau, and in common with the Fallout Marching Band, their work was political and educational, performing to the fighters and to the people in the liberated rural areas of Tigray. They had been given a break from their performing schedule for the duration of the school. Their performances were rooted in folk traditions and instruments and related to the lives of ordinary people. But they were concerned about the future of their traditional music, all learnt and passed on by ear, and wanted to write it down to preserve it for future generations. But they also wanted to develop a more modern sound using electric instruments that would increase the musical appeal to young fighters, who, they complained, would, if given a chance, record over any cassette with Michael Jackson. It is difficult to remember the details, but we worked long, hot hours. The days passed in a round of notation and arranging classes, individual instrumental teaching, women's band practice, and after a few months, recording and PA and synthesis classes, once the generator was turned on after dark and after fear of Derg spotter planes had passed, interspersed with meals and going to wash in the stream, watched over by a pack of baboons.
Has it started?
Our early political education and Tigrayan classes, taught by Iesu, the charismatic leader of the music school and the best English speaker who had to translate everything we taught, soon went for lack of time, as did our more experimental teaching approaches. We were really busy. We did have Sundays off, mainly spent chatting, going to the larger pool up or down river, or going to visit the only other British person for hundreds of miles, Graham, at the hospital, where he was training lab technicians. We also wrote letters home, waiting for news of the odd foreigner who might be leaving Tigray. We walked everywhere, there was no choice, often under cover of darkness and over difficult and steep terrain. Like all fighters, our meals were rationed and regulated to a steady diet of injera, shiro and tea. On Sundays, we had a glass of orange tang and sometimes a fighter bread made round a hot stone and eaten with oil and beriberi. We shat on the mountain, washed in the river and slept on a bed made of moulded mud. We did, of course, get VIP treatment. In our grass hut, we had a strip light, a desk, chairs and a bookcase. Our hut was often the party hut. It's all a very long time ago, but certain memories stick out, helped by photographs, recounting them to others, and more recently, rereading letters and diaries. We awoken very early, before first light. So good. The generator is on, and James Brown is blaring out all over the music Suddenly our hut is filled with people, many in cultural dress. We are urged out of bed and into a set of cultural clothes, and strong raki is drunk. Dancing and birthday celebrations ensue. There is a lot of gunfire. It is TPLF day, and the cultural troops are doing a gig. We travel at night on foot over a mountain pass, then sleep on the ground under trees in the day waiting for trucks. They finally arrive early the next evening. We travel to the venue. Next morning, we are woken by the sound of planes and a fighter telling us to run. We race out of the hut and down into the riverbed below. Crouching under a bit of overhanging riverbank, we watch a MiG fighter plane come in firing. The hut where 2 minutes before we had been lying in bed burst into flames, and with it our clothes, camera, diaries and professional Sony cassette recorder. Once they are convinced that the attack has ended, the main programme for the day is to get us away from there. We walk to a safe house. On the way, wading through the wide Tekezi River up to our chests. I am so shocked that I have to be supported on both sides and kept upright by fighters. We later learn that Tekezi has crocodiles and that people died in the attack. We have many political debates, but we hear that their way is the right way. They are fighting up to and including succession. It is a fight for the right to exist on their land, to speak their own language and enjoy their own culture. They are fighting for this through music and the arts. They are Marxist-Leninists like the Derg, but they believe that the Albanian Marxist-Leninism is the only true manifestation. We put forward our beliefs, but they seem wishy-washy and unsuitable for the development task at hand. We disagree on the position of women who, they say, need to work twice as hard to overcome their double oppression. We try to insist that women fighters are given equal opportunities to learn instruments and technology in the cultural troops and carry on working with the women's band. One evening, a fighter arrives on foot with a television set and video player on his shoulder. It is set up in a clearing, and we gather to watch The Thornbirds, an Australian-made TV romance starring Richard Chamberlain. When we get up and look around, suddenly there are about 500 people watching. We have no idea where they all came from. Many are crying. At the end of our trip, we travel to nearby villages to meet the people. We are very excited but pretty ill and tired by then and have little energy. We visit small towns and villages where everyone is delighted to see the fighters. They are musical superstars. We are told that many people have nothing in their houses that they have not made or grown themselves. We see people returning on foot from Sudan after leaving their land in search of food in the famine. We see dancing priests, women's meetings, fighter recruitment celebrations, hand ploughing. People who have almost nothing are very hospitable. We are offered and try to eat a little of goat stomach cooked in its own juices. We visit a Kanama village and watch them build a hut. We see the current need for and the effect of the TPLF. In July 1987, we left Tigray at short notice, as the last convoy out before the rains rendered it impassable was suddenly departing. We left in a hurry and without saying goodbye as well as we might have. In 1991, a united front comprising the TPLF and other liberation movements overthrew the Derg and formed a government. In 1992, the cultural troops visited London as part of a European-wide tour of the Tigrayan diaspora and performed at the Hackney Empire. We were delighted to see them. We then lost touch for a long, long time. In April 2019, we revisited Tigray to try and get in touch with old friends and comrades. We arrive in Mekelle, the main town of Tigray, to quite a welcome. Some of our old students and a camera crew are there to meet us with a brass instrument fanfare, cultural dress and flowers. We are taken by a convoy to our hotel and give interviews about our time with the TPLF. There is much beer and celebrating. Later, we cringe as we watch ourselves arriving, looking unsuspecting and unready, on the TV in the hotel lobby. The next day we are driven to the compound of the Tigray police band, now commanded by Mulu, once a sweet 17-year-old guitarist, now an equally sweet man in his 40s.
We saw it, yes. We saw it before 9 o'clock, yeah. We got back just in time. You haven't seen it? You haven't seen it? It's good.
The police band is big. There is a marching band and an orchestra, including traditional instruments. We laugh about the fact that in our 1987 project report, we were concerned for the future of traditional Tigrayan music. It is everywhere, literally everywhere. Marching band perform for us. They are young and at least half of them are women. Then we are taken inside for a special performance for us and the cameras. Many songs and dances are performed. We give speeches, we have a coffee ceremony, we cut the hambasha, it is all filmed. Later, we show people our photographs from long ago, chat to some of the members of the police band and do some interviews. We want to find as many of our past students as possible, to visit the site of the music school in the Kaza Valley and the Tekezi River, and maybe revisit some of the small towns and villages that we went to before. We are treated like celebrities. We are given a special tour of the Tigrayan Mechanical Engineering Factory and the cement works. We are amazed at their pride in these industries, but slowly it dawns on us that this to them is essential development, and that we have played a small part in that through music. After 3 days, we leave on our road trip. Our party includes 5 former students, a camera person and a journalist from Dimpsi Wayani, a Tigrayan TV station, who are filming a documentary about our trip, and 3 drivers. We are travelling in 3 Land Cruisers. We remember the ex-students really well and feel very fond of them, but none of them speak much English, so our communication is still limited. The roads are good and pretty deserted, apart from mules, cows, goats, camels and people. At various times we pass crowds of children in bright school uniforms going home, peasants, arms resting over sticks across their shoulders, women and children carrying water, and men sitting around watching the world go by. We cross makeshift roadblocks, peopled by men with guns, on their way into and out of villages. We cross the Tekezi River. It is wide and fast flowing. We stop for Sua, the local beer. The crew film and children throng wherever we go. In Adi Hagarai, we pick up another Land Cruiser with 4 armed guards to accompany us on our quest to find the site at the Gereza Music School. Amazingly, we find it.
Yeah.
Is this our classroom?
Kathy and your
house.
House.
Yeah.
It is sweltering. There is some water in the river. We are all interviewed, paddle and take photos. We identify the exact place where our house was. There is no sign of the music school at all, and there are many less trees. A week later, we arrive back in Addis. Once more, we are met at the airport by a selection of ex-students, once again bearing flowers. Two of them, Lejalem and Adani, are generals in the Ethiopian army. Lejalem speaks very good English and is an open and generous guide. That evening, we are touched and honoured to go out eating, drinking and dancing in the company of more ex-students. Once again, they pour over the photographs. Before we leave Addis, we witness another legacy of the Gerezer Music School. Adane is the director of the Ethiopian Defence Marching Band and Orchestra. Lejalem explains that when the Derg fell, the people who stayed on as fighters were deployed elsewhere and had to be trained to fill the huge gaps in infrastructure that occur after the downfall of the government. We are very aware of the irony of the starting point of the Fallout Marching Band and this apparent end point of the Ethiopian Defence Band. We are thinking this very much as we find ourselves on that raised dais, listening to and watching the Ethiopian Army Marching Band play three numbers just for us. Trying to work out what the story is and how best to tell it. It's a story of struggle for land and for national, state and self-development, but one in which music and the arts are seen as important as everything else.